Welcome back. It's the Big Show in the Morning. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. And right as we ended our morning report, isn't that the way the cookie crumbles? Pretty big news. Some breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use the word. Legendary defenseman.
Hall of Famer.
Zdeno Chara, without an absolute doubt, one of the greatest defensemen to ever lace him up, has announced his retirement after 24 seasons. The 45-year-old signing a one-day contract with the Boston Bruins, as he announced on Instagram. Pretty cool. Maybe we'll try and get a Bruins guest on sooner rather than later. You write that down, Patty?
Yeah, we can get some Bruins guys
perfect.
On.
We do go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk a little bit about the Philadelphia Flyers. Jordan Hall from NBC Sports in Philadelphia joins us today. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing quite well. No, I was just doing a little look-see here. And if I'm not mistaken, you've covered the Flyers in some effect for the better part of a decade. So you would have watched that team face Zdeno Chara quite a bit in your tenure covering the Flyers, no?
I did, yeah. And I remember vividly, it was actually during the season where it was during the bubble, not the bubble season, but the year after, where attendance was just starting to come back in a limited capacity. And I remember watching him on the Capitals, and he just had a couple of moments on a penalty kill where he blocked a couple shots and stayed out there for the entire PK. And I just remember telling myself, wow, like I'm watching greatness. I'm watching a great player, a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. So those types of players, you'll always pinch yourself and remind yourself when you're watching them that to appreciate it.
Yeah, and now it's kind of crazy to think of a league where I know he didn't play a ton for the Islanders last year, but a league without him, it's going to be kind of strange. Let's shift topics, though. Let's focus on the Philadelphia Flyers because they were making news yesterday as well. Sean Couturier is going to miss some time to start the season. The team's calling this an upper body injury week to week right now. We've heard it's an injury suffered during strength and conditioning drills. Our Elliot Friedman reported there's a second opinion being gathered. What is the latest on Couturier's status that you can tell us, Jordan?
Yeah, they're going to reevaluate him during training camp. I think they want to get another opinion on it and know exactly what it is. I truly don't think they know definitively what it is and what is going to be required for him to, you know, to heal it and get back. So I don't think they have a firm timeline yet. But it doesn't sound great because it's 3 days before training camp. Everything was going okay throughout the offseason with his back. And then something pops up again with his back. And it's not even in a physical practice. He was on the ice as recently as 3 days ago. And then something happened. So, you know, backs are kind of a finicky thing. And you never quite know, you know, if it's going to pop up or crop up again. The Flyers believe that surgery he had in February last year would resolve any issues of that going forward. But we don't know if it's a re-injury or if it's something new in his back area. But it's concerning. It's concerning regardless, though. And then, you know, they need Sean Couturier. They had 57 losses last season. He played in only 29 games. He's one of their most important players, an all-situation guy. And without him, they're a totally different team. And he's also starting the first year of a new deal, an 8-year deal. So if the Flyers needed, you know, some more breaks on the injury front, and this obviously is not a break.
I said this a little bit last year, and I'm curious to see if you agree, but I felt that when you lose Couturier for, like you mentioned, the majority of the season, and Ryan Ellis played, you know, you can count on one hand the games that he was able to play, and a team that probably had some playoff hopes going into last year or maybe looked at as a bubble team, and they end up, the bottom falls out. But I found it hard to really be that difficult on them when you lose a guy like Couturier and Ellis. Like, those are arguably your top defensive players in your forward groups and your defense groups. Did you feel the same way, that if they had been healthy with these two, it might have been a pretty different year, or was that just a total miss?
I did. A lot of people weren't as generous there, and because sometimes it's, you know, no excuses in hockey, injuries, be damned, it doesn't matter. But, I mean, Ryan Ellis and Sean Couturier combined to play 33 games. One's a top-pair defenseman that was filling a position that was the Flyers' biggest hole the year prior, and then the other's a top-pair, or a first-line center, plays in all situations, is considered a captain-like player for the Flyers. Just those are two massive roles in hockey, and they didn't have either of them really for the majority of the season. So, unfortunately for the Flyers, though, there was a theme around the offseason of, well, if they get healthy, yeah. What if they have Ryan Ellis? What if they have Sean Couturier? Give it time. We'll see what happens here next season. And they're actually probably going to be without both of them to start training camp, and a good chance they're going to be without both of them to start the regular season. So I think the Flyers had one of their worst seasons in franchise history last year, missing those two. And right now it doesn't appear that they're going to have those two. So it's definitely troubling times for them in Philadelphia, without a doubt.
So how do you look at the center depth now? What is the kind of lineup down the middle sans Sean Couturier?
The big thing is I think Scott Laughton will move the center full time. He was projected to play probably the wing. He's more of a natural center, but he's such a versatile guy that they like him on the wing and they feel he can complement guys on the wing. But without Sean Couturier, I think that he will definitely move the center full time. And then they'll project to probably have Kevin Hayes first line center, Laughton around second line center, and then Morgan Frost, a prospect they're hoping starts to take strides here at third line center, and then Patrick Brown will be their fourth line center. So center depth is definitely taking a hit when Sean Couturier is out.
We're talking to Jordan Hall from NBC Sports in Philadelphia, covering the Flyers here on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. My name is Matt Rose. He's Patty DuMas.
Jordan, we've watched John Tortorella from afar for many years, and we love him. We love what he does. We love his antics and whatnot.
From afar.
He isn't the type to make excuses, obviously. How have the late offseason experiences been with the new bench boss?
They've been good. They've been entertaining. That's what I thought when they hired him, that there would never be a dull day covering John Tortorella. So he's been fiery, and he's been as advertised. I spoke with him on the phone in July, and he kind of expressed frustration about, you know, some of the outside criticism of the team. And he said he was pretty ticked off about some of the criticism that his players have received. So I know, as demanding as he is on his players, he's as defensive as ever as well. He goes to war for his guys, and that's been fun to see. One of the biggest words I've heard from so many people that have talked to him about him to me is culture. And it's not just a word. It's like he truly changes the culture from top to bottom, from players to trainers to management to ownership. Like he demands more, and I think that's the one thing he's going to do is he's going to come in and really get guys to buy in and play the right way. And overall, he's going to give them some direction. The Flyers haven't had a lot of direction over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think they have good players and people that I think want to win but don't exactly know how to go about it. And John Tortorella has been there, done that. He's won a cup, and he's got a history of turning teams around. So I think the Flyers are really eager for what he's going to bring.
And how have the group of players reacted to Torts being around?
They're anxious, for sure. Cam Atkinson, who's played for him in Columbus, and he's a part of the leadership group here in Philadelphia, he said a lot of guys are kind of anxious and nervous, but he said that's a good thing. Like, you want to go into camp feeling a little uncomfortable, and that's what John Tortorella does. So I think they're anxious to get his direction, but at the same time, they know he puts on a grueling camp, and they don't exactly know what's in store until they go through it. But overall, I think there's an eagerness and an anxiousness, and I think that's good because, you know, I'm not saying the Flyers were, you know, comfortable over the last 2 years, but, yeah, maybe they did need a new face to come in and kind of push the envelope a little bit and change the culture.
Now, Chuck Fletcher maybe didn't go get the big fish. I know there was obviously the Goudreau rumors and whatnot, but they did bring in a defenseman in Anthony DeAngelo for quite a bit, second, third, and a fourth. They also signed the 26-year-old to a 2-year, $10 million deal. What have you made of his arrival?
I think the club realized that there was a ton of uncertainty around Ryan Ellis. Yeah. And given the uncertainty around Ryan Ellis, they wanted some insurance. And Tony DeAngelo, I think, provides good insurance on the ice. Now, there's been a lot of buzz about what he does off the ice and his track record before coming to the Flyers, but from all accounts so far, it seems like people are excited to play with him, and that a lot of people have gone to bat for him and saying he's been a good teammate, that he did the right things in Carolina. He played hard for Rob Brind'Amour, and now he's matured. He's 26 years old, so I think he's come a long way in terms of maturity. And he can help them, without a doubt. And it's looking like they're going to really need him now, given Ryan Ellis' situation. So he's projected to play on the top pair. He's going to probably play on their top power play unit. And a guy that's really going to take a lot of pride being a Flyer, because he's from the South Jersey, South Philly area. So he's been kind of on cloud nine. He really wants to play for the Flyers. And in my mind, you know, a team that's coming off a 57-loss season, it's tough to get guys to want to come and play here and be excited about it. He is, and I think that's a win to start the season.
Another guy they brought in, to the ilk of what the Flyers are. It's Nick DeLaurier. I think he's a good fit on the club, and he was fit in well with Minnesota in their postseason run. Are the Flyers excited about this addition for to help out some of their younger guys as well?
They are. I don't think the fan base is as much, and a lot of that has to do with because they were, you know, the fans were hoping for a big splash like Johnny Gaudreau or something along the lines of a top six forward. So if Nick DeLaurier was more of a marginal addition among other big ones, I think the fan base would have been more excited. But the organization really believes he can add something, and that's toughness, kind of an in-your-face player, a guy that's going to maybe create some space on the ice for his teammates because of how he plays. Some people didn't love that he had some trade protection in his deal, but that's for the first couple of seasons. So, do I think he's going to, turn around the Flyers himself? No, but I do think he can play a role, and I do think there is a need for toughness in the NHL still, a guy that's going to, get in your face and really, create some space for his teammates on the ice. So management really thinks he can provide something, and I know John Tortorella really does too. He appreciates those kind of players. So they're eager to see what they're going to get from Nick DeLaurier.
You mentioned the swing and the miss, perhaps, on Johnny Gaudreau. How is the fan base's kind of reaction to a top player being linked to his hometown team and things just not coming to fruition?
Yeah, they haven't gotten over it. And I don't think they will for a while, and I can't fault them for it. I thought it was a bit of a swing and a miss, too. It'd be one thing if they went after him in free agency and, were in a bidding war and lost. It's like you can live with that. You can say, hey, we went after him. But for many accounts, it sounds like they didn't really aggressively go after him. And to me, a player of Johnny Gaudreau's caliber who wants to come here after the Flyers had the season they did, I feel like you have to take advantage of that. And a lot of people thought it would put butts back in seats, at least. It would excite the fan base. They were hurting attendance-wise last year from January on, big time. And this would have at least, gotten the excitement of the fan base back up. You probably could have sold a ton of jerseys. Tickets would have been going up. And you got to think he helps you on the ice, too. But from all accounts, the Flyers weren't really aggressive after him. They felt they just didn't have the ability to make the cap space. So fans really, I think, have not gotten over it. I think it's going to take wins and a team that's, near the top of the standings and fighting for a playoff push for them to fully forget that and get over it. So it's going to take some time. But again, wins and John Tortorella, I think, could do it.
Talking to Jordan Hall from NBC Sports Philadelphia. Just a few more here for you, Jordan. Rookie camp did wrap up. The 2020 first-rounder Tyson Forster was in the forward group there. Several mid-rounders on the blue line, but no Morgan Frost, no Bobby Brink, no Cam York, all kind of in the main camp group, I'm assuming. Were there any standouts from rookie camp for you?
Yeah, Tyson Forster was absolutely one of them. He won one of the rookie games in overtime, and he really showed off his touted shot, and he's a guy that would fill a need for the Flyers, and that's shoot-first wingers, guys that can score from that circle flank area. And so they drafted him in 2020 with the hopes of him eventually filling a hole organizationally. So Forster was the guy that looked very good. And Oli Litzell, a Swedish kid who was a lower-round draft pick, he's a little older now. He's making the jump to the North American ice after playing in the SHL. Really played well. Nice skilled player. Kind of under the radar in the Flyers system, but a guy that's going to play for the Phantoms, the team's AHL affiliate. And I think he's going to provide some offense and make some noise. He scored in both rookie games and really showed off his skill from the start of rookie camp to the end of it. So nice little player there as well.
What's the status on Joel Farabee for the start of the season?
Right now, he's been on the ice in informal workouts, so that's a good sign. I mean, he had the surgery on his neck a little fewer than 3 months ago. So that I thought it's a good sign that he's on the ice in informal workouts, but I don't know how much he's been allowed to do. I imagine he has not been cleared for contact yet. We're going to learn a lot more in the next day or so.
Yeah.
But they projected that he would possibly miss, you know, a good chunk of camp, if not most of it, and maybe a week or so into the regular season. I think it's looking better right now than they originally projected, but we're still not sure if he's going to be a full go yet for Tortorella's camp. I think they're going to really err on the side of caution, given all the injuries they had last year and how important of a player he is, and really the seriousness of the surgery to the neck area. But from all accounts, he's coming along fine, and they're hoping he can be ready at some point towards the beginning of the regular season.
A couple of PTOs, Antoine Roussel, who I was like, yeah, of course it's Philly PTO. This feels like it's a little late. And then Artem Anisimov. Do you see either of them making the club?
I can't say I do. I don't know if they fit, but I do think they're going to get a good look. Artem Anisimov obviously played for John Tortorella in New York, so there's a history there. And then perhaps the Sean Couturier injury factored into those PTOs. Maybe they realized they could be without an important center, so let's get a couple forwards in here with experience. I don't foresee them making the team, but I definitely think they're going to get a fair look. Chris Stewart was on our PTO a couple of years ago, the season before the pandemic-shortened season, 2019-20, excuse me. Chris Stewart was on a PTO, and he got signed and made the team. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I foresee them getting a good look but not making the team.
Absolute last one for you, and I promise. How's your outlook for this upcoming season in the Metropolitan Division? Because I look at it and I say, man, I like Carolina. I like New York. Questions in Pittsburgh and Washington, maybe. Islanders, Jersey, Columbus on the upswing. And then there's the Philadelphia Flyers. And with these injuries, I just don't know.
Yeah, I do not see the Flyers really contending for the playoffs. And that would be three straight years without the playoffs if that becomes true, which Flyers fans and the organization have had a track record of making the playoffs and at least contending for them. So that would not be a good thing. But I see the Metropolitan Division looking loaded. I really think it's deep. I mean, the Devils are even a team that a lot of people think have upside and are starting to develop some younger players. So not only are the Flyers dealing with injuries and a new head coach and the season they had prior, but they're also dealing with a competitive division with experience and young teams that are starting to turn into teams. So I don't foresee the Flyers contending for the playoffs. I think it's a transitional year. I think they'll be better than they were last year. But given the health struggles, I think a lot of people are just concerned about where this team could finish.
Jordan, really appreciate the time today and all your insight. We're looking forward to the season. It's going to be an interesting one for this Philadelphia team. We just hope they can get healthy earlier rather than later. Thanks for the time today, man.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
There you go. That's Jordan Hall.
Beauty.
Some great insight. That was awesome. I'm down on the Flyers.
Yeah.
Especially with this Couturier news. Like, that's hard. That's brutal.
I think even before Couturier, like, they're probably going to be a 34-win team probably around
Dude,
that.
The Metro,
it's a slog.
It might not be the best division, but it might be the closest.
From top to bottom.
From top to bottom, yeah. Right? Like, I think that the Central's very good and the Atlantic is going to be very good.
Yeah.
The Metropolitan, I just look at it and I say basically anybody but Philly could pop something off and have a good year here.
Yeah, the Islanders will be bouncing back after their down year. Obviously, Pittsburgh is still there. The Rangers are there as well.
This is the way I see it. You got Pittsburgh and Washington,
yep,
who have aging cores but elite players that I would never count out.
Yeah,
you have the Rangers, who are going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Hurricanes, who are going to be good. Then you've got Columbus and New Jersey, who are up-and-coming teams. And then you've got New York, who was, in the second half, would have been a playoff team if they hadn't have gotten off to that awful start with the 13-game road trip. And then they got COVID right after that. Like, they just had, like, a terrible first quarter of the season and could never really recover. So I wouldn't rule the Islanders out because I don't think that they've had that many changes.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, Sorokin's going to get a lot more time, and he's an elite NHL netminder.
It's gonna,
and then it's Philly.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, if there's any year you want to be bad, this is going to be the year you want to be bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. Flyers fans are quite, you know, they're sick of it. This is a team that hasn't missed the playoffs in back-to-back years very often. This is a team and a fan base that has gone over 40 years without a Stanley Cup. It's a passionate group in Philadelphia. They want winners, and Tortorella wants a winner as well. Tortorella's not going to want this thing. I mean, by choice, he really doesn't have much choice. This team's not a good team, but his coaching, his bump, is probably going to push this team a little bit better than I think last year, you'd hope. But, I mean, Carter Hart in net, that's another guy that needs a bounce back year, too.
Well, he's needed a bounce back year since his rookie season, yeah. Basically. But it's a grind out there. And John Tortorella is a very interesting wrinkle. Oh, and they're over the cap. There's that. I don't know how you did that, but you're over the cap. Shoot. That's too bad.
Well, you got a couple weeks to get that righted.
I assume that there's going to be some LTIR type stuff that has to go down here.
AHL money.
Are they going to be, what, you know, Blackhawks and...
Blackhawks, Coyotes, Habs.
A dumpster fire.
Flyers.
Philly, Habs. Kraken?
Kraken will be better, but I don't know if they're top five worst. They'll be better, but essentially, like, it's just another year growing for them. I don't think they're willing to be a playoff team this year.
Or are the Sharks worse? Who's going to be worse, the Sharks or the Kraken?
Sharks might be worse than the Kraken, actually.
No Brent Burns. Timo Meier maybe getting traded.
Mm-hmm.
Goaltending question marks abound. Oof.
There's a lot of bad teams in this league.
Mark Edward Vlasic is 35. Still signed for 4 more years. P.U. We'll take a break around the corner. One of our absolute favorites, Adnan Virk, set to join us. The playoff races in the MLB, heating up. Basically 15 games left wherever you look across the board. And we've got some races to talk about. All that coming up next with our boy, Adnan Virk, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Oh, boy. What is it? Retirement week? I thought we were getting ready for training camp. What the hell's going on?
These guys, they just can't get work.
These pension, please.
I want my free money now.
Coming down during the commercial break, PK Subban hanging him up, calling it a career. That is PK Subban, Zdeno Chara, and Keith Yandel.
In less than 24 hours.
Like, those are three of your top five fantasy defensemen a decade ago.
Right?
My goodness.
Like, look at the 2010. Look, 2010, these are, like, some of the three best defensemen popping around in the NHL.
Listen, yesterday on the show, we had a whole bunch of texts. I want to talk more hockey. So I was like, okay, we'll book a couple hockey guests. We got Jordan Hall talking Flyers in the last segment. We're going to talk some Avalanche and Connor McGehee coming up. And then we got Adnan Virk, who we wanted to talk a little bit of baseball about. But hi, Adnan. What's going on? What's with all these defensemen retiring, man? What's going on?
That's crazy. Soft spot for Yandel, former Flyer. Mm-hmm. Subban, I will always think about the fact that incredible generosity he gave to the Montreal Children's Hospital. You know, $10 million. That's unbelievable. It's not... You know, people will forget, you know, what you said to them years in life, but they'll remember how you made them feel. And I was like, you know what? I know there's a lot to be said about PK Subban. I know that he was overpaid. I know he did not give the Devils what we were all hoping for. I know he was not as strong last year's of his career, but I'm like, man, that guy at his peak was awfully exciting. What a Norris. And like I said, that generosity will not be forgiven. And Zdeno Chara, man, I'm like, that guy's just a beast. I mean, just a gigantic man on skates. And, you know, I often think guys that big won't work because I'm like, you know, eventually your body's going to break down. It's just unnatural. It's Bill Walton, all the issues he had with his feet. And I remember that Aaron Judge got called up. I'm like, man, there's not a history of like a lot of big baseball guys aside from like Dave Winfield and Frank Howard and a few others. So when a big man can last as long as Chara did, it's insane to me. And to play at such a high level. And even at the end, like, you know, fine, 16, 17 minutes, he's out there. He's still grabbing guys and swarming around them. It's, you're right, 10 years ago, that was a pretty high pick in your fantasy draft. That's funny.
So there we go. That's the NHL Network portion of the Adnan Virk interview. Let's move on to MLB Network. Yes, that's the next one. White Sox and Guardians, man. Disappointing season for Chicago and maybe manager of the year for Terry Francona. That's what Patty Dumas was trying to float to me, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
I think if the Guardians make the playoffs, they get the thing. I think Tito's manager of the year.
Well, I love Tito. You don't need to sell me on him. I worked with him at ESPN. He's a phenomenal guy. He's so funny. He's got a great sense of humor. Terry Francona would tell us, whoever he was sitting next to would say, hey, if you go with me to the CAF, I'll buy you food. And I assumed that he just wanted some company, but it was because he said he had the worst sense of direction of anyone known to man. He said, when the elevator door opens, no matter where I am, I don't know which way to go. Now, when I repeated that to a few players, they actually didn't find it as funny as I did. They're like, well, no, like if you've traveled as much as we do, that is true. You really don't have any idea where you're going. It's just an example of the kind of guy Tito is and why the players all love him. And to Patty's point, you know, Cleveland was not expected to do anything this year. They were thought to be, you know, probably second, maybe third in the division. Everyone thought the White Sox would easily win the division by, like, you know, 8 to 10 games. And the fact that Cleveland, I believe, will win the division, and they've got the four-game edge right now, the White Sox, the massive series, it goes to show you what a great manager Francona is. They've obviously built up excellent pitching, which is a real strength of the team. You know, Bieber's outstanding as always. Cal Quantrill's really good. Shout out to Port Hope, Ontario. Clase is one of the best closers in the game. Ramirez is outstanding. And their lineup, they don't strike out a ton. That's what's interesting about them. They don't have a lot of power guys aside from Jose Ramirez, with a lot of Stephen Kwans and Owen Millers and guys that make contact and are fun to watch. So, listen, I stumped for my guys, and that would be Tito, that would be Aaron Boone, that would be Alex Cora. I guess Boone would have been my guy. I mean, he would have been manager of the year at the halfway point, but obviously August killed his candidacy. I just talked to Alex Cora the other day. He's a huge college. We used to laugh because we would always do baseball tonight. On Saturdays during college football season at 2:30. 2:30 means 2:30 in the morning. It's just absurdity. I was like, who the hell is watching this? And yet the ratings would be good because people would leave their TVs on, falling asleep watching, you know, BYU. So, unfortunately, it's not going to be Alex Cora because the team is sub-500. But I would argue this. Without Alex Cora, that team's like 100 losses. That's how bad Boston is. AC keeps those guys afloat. So, yes, out of pure people that I know, I will go with Terry Francona and back up Patty. But I do think that Brandon Hyde should be in the conversation. If the Orioles finish with more wins than losses, that to me is a superhuman achievement. I mean, they had 110 losses last year. They're currently 76-70. So six more wins, I'd give manager of the year to him.
I'm wondering how you're handicapping the race in the wild card kind of American League. They're mostly jockeying for position at this point with 15 games left. The Mariners have the easiest schedule. The Rays have one of the most difficult schedules down the way, and the Jays don't have a cakewalk either. So how are you handicapping that race with only one series between two of the teams, a four-gamer coming up between the Rays and Jays this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Honestly, it's it's interesting, Matty, because a part of me sometimes says, well, just get in the playoffs and see what happens from there. Like, you know, who cares who you're playing, where you're playing, et cetera. But, you know, if you really look at it and say, no, this is vital that you get that four spot. Like, you tell me you don't want to have a three-game series at Rogers Center against the Mariners or the Rays. Like, that would be a real feather in your cap, give the team a huge boost. And I think for Seattle it's vitally important because they are going to end the longest playoff drought in professional sports. And they're going to do so not by virtue of an extra wild card spot, meaning if they get the fourth or fifth spot, they can actually tell themselves, like, yeah, we weren't just in because we're the beneficiary of baseball adding an extra playoff team. We were knocking on the door a year ago, a game behind the Jays. We were in the sixth wild card spot a year ago, and now we actually made it. So I think they want to say, no, like, we're a legit playoff team. We want to host a three-game series and get our crowd behind us. The only one that it doesn't really impact as much, of course, is Tampa, because those crowds – are, you know, historically and famously nothing special. But the reason home field is important is opposing teams hate playing there because it's such a funereal atmosphere and you got the giant catwalk that's so cavernous. And, like, they're I don't mean to be a jerk, but they're not going to sell out even if it's a playoff game. But they'll usually get, what, 18,000? I mean, they'll probably double that. They'll get 36,000. Like, the crowds will show up for a playoff game, especially if it's only a three-game series. But I would just think for Tampa, it's not as vitally important. For Toronto and Seattle, it is. And you're right about schedules. Although with schedule watching, it's always misleading. I mean, you know, sometimes you look at a team and say, well, the schedule's really easy. It's favorable, and then they don't step up. So it's easier said than done. I just watched the Mets. You know, they had a 10-game stretch of teams that were sub-500. They went 4-6, which is one of the reasons why Atlanta's still hanging around. But yet the Mets also swept the Pirates when they had to this past weekend. Sure as a return last night looked dominant. So Yeah, I think sometimes we can get caught up in the schedule watching maybe a little bit too much. It's definitely a part of the conversation. You guys are right to bring it up. But I just think in football, it's different. When I look at football and I see a schedule, I go, yeah, that really does change things. Like, as an Eagles fan, I'm like, no. When I looked at that schedule, I'm like, we have to go 4-0 out of the gate, minimum 3-1. That's how soft that schedule is. By the way, 2-0. Hurts looked great last night. So, yeah, I think it's going to be – I'm hoping for the Jays. It goes Jays – you know, I think the Rays are playing the worst right now. So I would think if I'm a Jays fan, I'm going to go Jays, Rays, Mariners. But I think it's going to be Jays, Mariners, Rays. Or like you said, with that schedule, maybe it'll be Mariners, Jays, Rays, and Toronto ends up going to Seattle.
It's going to be a lot of fun, that's for sure. Jays and the Phillies go tonight, 4:45. You can listen to that on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, or watch it on Sportsnet West. Last night, the Orioles got dusted by the Tigers. They're done. That's a pretty big step in the right direction, though, for a franchise that has been putrid for years, maybe even decades.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The Orioles were actually, it hasn't been that long. Because remember, when Buck Showalter was there, they made the playoffs a couple times. At that mid-2010, they were actually a good baseball team. But when they've been bad, they've been horrible. And that's what really stands out, that you're like, wow, the Orioles are like a 100-loss team, and you can't see them getting better anytime soon. Like, you felt like they're going to be destined to be cellar dwellers. The Yankees have made the playoffs something like 30. No, sorry, they've been over 500. I believe it's like 30 years in a row. Like, it's just a crazy stat the other day I was thinking. Because I'm like, I'm around so many Yankees fans that lament the fact they haven't won a World Series since 09. And I'm like, but every year you're a winning team. Like, you never have a year where you're bottom out. Every year, like, yeah, we're a winning team. Like, that's easier said than done. Toronto, as we all know, young nucleus of talent. The Rays are always going to be the Rays and find a way to be competitive. And Boston is in the basement this year, but, you know, they're going to spend. So they'll re-sign Devers and Bogarts and go sign some people because they're the Red Sox. They've got deep pockets. So, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you go, man, Baltimore, it's just unfortunate. They're never going to be good. And yet this year happens, you go, wow, here come the Orioles. There's reason to believe that Baltimore can be a wild card team and they can push next year. So it goes back to my point about Hyde being in the contention for manager of the year. And I think Michael Eisen has done a great job, the general manager. How about the fact this year they're in the wild card hunt and yet, you know, he doesn't push the pedal to the metal. He's like, we're sticking to the plan here. We're not a playoff team yet. No. We will be, but we're not right now. So we're going to trade Jorge Lopez, who's our top all-star closer. I'm going to trade Trey Mancini. And they didn't miss a beat. They still hung in there. And we're a quality baseball team for much of the year until those two crucial series with the Blue Jays. I mean, when the Jays took 3 of 4, including that doubleheader on Labor Day, that was a pretty big step. And then this past series, you know, the Jays took 2 of 3 and it was over. And then yesterday, the 11-0 against the Tigers, and it's officially done for the Orioles 5 games back. But just great stories all around, and you see why the nucleus of talent. Ali Rutschman's a stud. You know, it took him about 20 games to get loose once he got called. But once he was there, I can't think of anything more vital in baseball than a catcher who could hit. Because he comes up as a rookie, and he already has to work through all the scouting reports and get familiar with the pitchers and game plan. But then he can also hit. Like, he is impacting the game so strongly at both ends, and there's very few catchers who can legitimately hit like he can. Gunnar Henderson's a stud. Guy gets called up right away. You know, Julio Rodriguez and Ali Rutschman needed 20 games to acclimate. Gunnar Henderson's been hitting 300 since he got called up. He looks awesome. Mountcastle's obviously a good young player. You got Hayes. You have Mullins, who bounced back after a slow start. The big problem for them is their starting pitching wasn't very good this year. The Orioles' starting pitching ranks, you can look it up. I think their ERA is like 23rd, 24th. But they've got young arms right now down in AAA. So if one or two of those guys get called up next year, and I think they need to go out and sign somebody, if they go sign a big free agent pitcher out there, you know, Carlos Rodon or whoever is available, then all of a sudden I think the Orioles, you go, wow, this is not a flash in the plan. They're coming. And for the rest of the AL East teams, good luck.
Talking to Adnan Virk here on the Big Show in the Morning. Join us down the Alice Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. My name is Matty Rose. He's Patty Dumas.
Over in the National League, Adnan, you got the NL East race, obviously, between the Braves and the Mets. The loser there is going to be the top wild card. But then at the bottom, it's the Padres, it's the Phillies, and it's the Brewers. How do you think that NL wild card race is going to shake out?
Well, I'm partial probably to the Padres because, you know, Tatis is one of my favorite players. So I'm still dealing with the fact he got crushed with this PED suspension, which I was like, dude, this guy's the face of baseball. He's in the cover of MLB The Show. Me and my son love him, and all of a sudden, bam. We have to go put away our matching Fernando Tatis shirts for at least a year. So I was really bummed by that because I said, you know, San Diego is a really fun team, and they've never won a World Series. And I always root for the underdogs, root for good stories. The Padres have an electric fan base, which is not something you would think of. For years, the Padres were, you know, San Diego's one of the most beautiful cities you'll ever go to. 70 and sunny year-round. People go to the beach. It's all good. But they're not necessarily competitive. But now it's like a hardcore baseball town. They were third in attendance last year. I believe they're either second or third this year. Like, it's impressive. Like, they fill out that place. And I think a big part of that, of course, is the Chargers are gone. So it's kind of like when Seattle, once the Sonics left, right, you really become attached to your team. You saw what happened with the Sounders and the Mariners and, of course, the Seahawks. The same thing. San Diego, they're like, oh, they're all in on the Padres. There's nothing else there. So Preller makes these moves, and I think he's a really smart guy, but he's kind of like treating it like it's fantasy football. Like, I'm just going to go and get all the stars. Like, I'll get Soto. I'll get Bell. I'll give you a bunch of prospects. By the way, Abrams has been excellent for the Nationals so far. Like, they give up a lot to get these guys. So it's not like Washington isn't going to benefit with Abrams and the other prospects they got. But I understood Preller's point. Hey, listen, we're really good at drafting prospects. We'll draft some more prospects. It's fine. I need some stars right now. We're trying to make the playoffs. They haven't made the playoffs over a full season in a long time. Made the playoffs in 2020, of course, the COVID season. So it is, like, so important for San Diego just to make the playoffs. Again, like the Mariners, get the monkey off your back and get in there. But they're going to fight tooth and nail. Now, the Phillies had an amazing stretch without Bryce Harper. Go figure. They hung in and played, like, 550, maybe like 580 baseball without Bryce Harper. Bryce comes back, and now they're slumping. It's almost like they figured he would just carry them through, and he hasn't been playing very good baseball lately. So the Phillies are struggling right now. The Padres never took off. You expected them to just be superheroes, and instead Soto's struggled mightily. Like, it was stunning. He had a big game on Sunday, and prior to that, he hit like 083 in his previous 11 games. It was stunning how bad he's been. Still walks a bunch, of course, but we need more than walks if you're Juan Soto. Bell's really struggled. Hader was so bad, he was you know, demoted. Had to give him a couple of days to get used. Although the last few appearances, he looked really good. So, again, I go with my heart more than my head. I really want the San Diego Padres to make the playoffs. I think it rewards Preller for being aggressive. I think if other GMs see that, they go, ah, see, that's why you shouldn't be aggressive. That's why you should just, you know, sit tight. Like, no, I love the fact he's going for it. He's trying to push. Because what he's treating the postseason like is like March Madness. Like, the Dodgers are going to win the division. Fine, I don't care. You win it by 21 games. But if I can beat you 3-5, we're going to the next round. So I'm going to get all these stars, and hopefully it can happen. So I like his blueprint. It's just the players just haven't stepped up. That brings us to the Brewers, who really looked deflated after they traded Hader. Yeah. You could tell the team was like, oh, my God, what are we doing? This guy's our all-star closer. And yet, as we've just discussed, Hader hasn't been good. But Milwaukee's been inconsistent, particularly their offense. Now, they do have two outstanding starting pitchers. You saw Woodruff the other day, how good he is on Saturday, I believe it was, against the Yankees. Obviously, Burns is the reigning Cy Young Award winner. The big news for them is, thank God, Yelich is finally playing better. He's got a massive contract, and he finally has been good the last couple of months. But Willy Adames has been their offensive star. They got him from the Rays. He's really carried them through. So in the American League, the wild card teams, we know it. We know it's Jays, Mariners, and Rays. In the NL, it really is going to go down to the wire, which is, as a baseball fan, what you want to see. But I'm hoping it ends up being Padres and Phillies, not the Brewers, with respect to the fine people of Wisconsin. I just want to see the Padres get in there and reward Preller's patience.
Now, what about the two top in the NL East? It's been a battle all year between the Mets and Braves. Winner of the division obviously gets the bye. Second has to go host the wild card round. But they also have to play in that wild card round, and then they play the three. But they play the three-game set at the end of the year, September 30th to October 2nd. Is this the most intriguing race to go, is the NL East crown?
Yeah, I mean, I still always think the Brewers, Phillies, Padres is more interesting because one team will not make it.
Yeah.
But you can make a case for the Mets and the Braves because one of those teams is really going to be behind the eight ball. Like, one of those teams is going to win 100 games and have to be a wild card team. That's going to be incredibly frustrating. They're going to look around and go, we're the third best team in baseball. Like, it's going to be Dodgers, Astros, and now us. And yet we're going to play a wild card. And, of course, the team that was ahead of them in the division. So, if the Mets are the wild card, they'll go, wow. Aside from the Braves and the Dodgers, we're the best team in the National League. That's incredibly frustrating. Here's what's a killer for the Mets. So it's a three-game series. It would line up Scherzer and DeGrom those first two games. Now, let's suppose they win those two games. Okay, fine, it'll be the next round. But then the division series, neither guy is starting game one or game two. So already, if you're facing, you wouldn't face the Dodgers necessarily. I guess it depends how it shakes out. And I think you'd face the Cardinals, perhaps, if you're the wild card team. But regardless, they'd be able to say, all right, we got a Wainwright starting. So that's why I think for the Mets, it's so important to win the division. I don't think it's as important for the Braves. I feel like the Braves have proven, especially after a slow start, just how strong they are top to bottom. And their top two pitchers with Kyle Wright and Spencer Strider, it's not vital if they pitch. Those guys, by the way, have been outstanding this season. But I feel like if the Braves were in a wild card series, if they had to face the Padres and the Phillies, they win that round, they wouldn't be as much of a behind the eight ball as the Mets are. So it's pretty cool to wonder that, two teams who are going to win 100 games. One gets the division, one gets the wild card. And right now, it's just a one-game deficit. Like, as of tomorrow, there's 2 weeks left in the regular season. So it's not a cliche to say every game, every pitch, every inning really counts. And great news for the Mets is Scherzer came back. 6 perfect innings. He only threw like 67 pitches. He looked awesome last night and gets his 200th career win. One of 3 active pitchers to do that. So they need a healthy Max Scherzer. There's no doubt about it. To compete.
Adnan Virk joining us here on the Big Show. That's the MLB Network kind of story. We always ask you about the Philly teams as well. And you mentioned it. The Eagles are 2-0. They scrape one out against the Detroit Lions in a pretty resounding victory last night against the Vikings. You got to be feeling good about Jalen Hurts right now.
I am. You know, I was really cautious last season. I was like, all right, I thought kind of wasted an early pick on this guy who's basically like, you know, he uses the wildcat. He's going to come in and do some runs when Carson Wentz is the starter. But instead, Wentz bottoms out, has proven that he's a shell of himself. Hurts becomes a starter, and again last year I was still very skeptical. I said, okay, he's a great running quarterback. I got that part. You know, he led the league with 764 rushing yards. Quarterback, cool. But can you make plays? Can you go through your progressions? All that kind of stuff. And the word of the training camp was Hurts looks awesome. Like, he's dedicated. He's focused. Here we go. Eagles are the favorites. I'm like, yeah, I got to see it. And then week 1 against the Lions, he looked really good, especially the chemistry with A.J. Brown, who I didn't realize. Good job by Lisa Salters yesterday explaining how they're actually really good friends. So when the trade was announced, they were overjoyed. It wasn't like, who's this new guy going to get used to? They're actually really close. So it was like, you know, good friends being united. So they had their chemistry down set almost before the trade happened. And week 1, Brown looked awesome, over 150 yards. Last night, Devontae Smith played great, who, of course, is the Eagles' number 2, but had a great rookie season a year ago. And Hurts was awesome. I mean, very few incompletions. I think he had 5 incompletions, but like only 2 in the first half. The interception wasn't his fault. It was a deflection. And that deep ball looked great. And he was able to make plays and squeeze balls in there. So I was really impressed with Hurts. I'm like, wow, he looks like he's made a giant step forward 2 games in. And as a second-year starter still under a very affordable contract, Howie Roseman knows what he's doing, the Eagles vice president. He's like, all right, you know, if I get the quarterback for cheap, I can spend elsewhere. That's why they went out and got Bradbury the corner, Reddick the linebacker, you know, drafted a D-tackle and Jordan Davis. So it's a smart blueprint, and I think that early returns are good. I mentioned the schedule was going to be favorable. Like, I knew, okay, first 4 games are going to be pretty good. Next week they got the Commanders on the road, and then week 4 is the Jaguars at home. So they got to go 4-0 at the minimum 3-1. You can certainly believe in this team, because then it will get tougher. Cowboys in week 6, and then they've got a bye. But last night, Hurts was rolling, man. He looked great.
Yeah, and that, even that, like around the Cowboys, 1 game against the Cardinals. What are they this year? Then it's the Steelers, the Texans, and the Commanders again. Like, yeah, that schedule, I don't hate looking at that, that's for sure. I wanted to also ask you about the Flyers. Tough news on Sean Couturier, man. That's, you don't like to see that. Good Canadian, an outstanding centerman, and going to miss some more time. That's got to be disappointing for a lot of fans in Philly who, granted, are probably a little bit more wrapped up in what the Eagles are doing right now.
No, but you're right. Flyers always have a huge fan base in Philadelphia, and the fans love their hockey there. And I was bummed to see it. You know, one of my good friends who lives here in Jersey is a huge Flyers fan, so he texted me right away to think Couturier is done. And I hadn't seen the news. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm like, it's obviously another setback. And it's frustrating because he was a guy who was a prolific scorer in junior, gets called up, and he was a great defensive centerman. Then he showed he can be offensively gifted as well, so now he's a great two-way player, wins the Selke, and then unfortunately injuries hurt him last year, and now this lays a setback as well. So it's tough because as a Flyers fan, here's $8 million here against the Caps. I'm like, dude, we need you out there. And the Flyers this season, you know, bubble team at best. Like, they're going to have to battle for a playoff spot, hope that Tortorella can give them a bump because they need to get healthy. They need Couturier back. They need Alice, who hasn't shown us anything so far as a Flyer. They have to hope Carter Hart continues to show his added growth. Kevin Hayes has to stay healthy. Like, best case, absolute best case, you're an 8 seed. You're probably more like a 9 or 10 or 11. So with Couturier being out, it's definitely a tough blow.
And finally, I wanted to ask you about Cinephile as well. I believe it was the end of last week's episode. You were talking about Sam Rockwell, maybe standing some Sam Rockwell this week. I just wanted to throw out my 3 favorites. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, 3 Billboards, and the most recent one, Jojo Rabbit. My three favorite Rockwell films.
Oh, Maddie, those are three great ones. Hitchhikers, I haven't seen in years. Three Bovens, of course, one of the Oscar outstanding. I think that's got to be a no-brainer. You see how powerful he is in that movie because, you know, his character is, just comes across as this terrible person, right? Mean-spirited, racist, and then he kind of shows you his humanity, which is a real gift of Rockwell's. And Jojo Rabbit, again, speaking of humanity, crazy movie for those who haven't seen it. Like, you never think you'd have Hitler as a sidekick, but that's the story. He is this, you know, friend, his imaginary friend, and it's kind of a really kind of quirky tale. And Rockwell, again, playing a Nazi, like, okay, how's he going to make this guy likable? But he does. And again, he gives that character humanity and shows a different side of him. So I think he's such a talented actor. And of course, I saw him on Broadway this summer in American Buffalo, which is a tremendous David Mamet play. Came out in the late 70s. Some of my favorite plays. And being able to see Rockwell on stage with Lawrence Fishburne was amazing. So, yeah, see how they run. I will not spoil it since you will listen to Cinephile. You are a good friend and a good supporter of the pod. Wasn't great, but Rockwell is always fun. So Rockwell worth the price of admission. The movie, a little bit less so.
Well, we always appreciate the time. I'll be glued waiting for the new episode, of course, and enjoy it. This is going to be a fun race to the end of the MLB as well.
Yeah, last 2 weeks will be fun, and the hockey training camp's open right now. Obviously, the football going on. It's a great time to be a sports fan. Patty, Maddie, I appreciate you.
Thanks, Adnan.
Take care, brother. There you go. Adnan Virk joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Great chat. Have you seen those three movies?
I have not seen Three Billboards. I've been told to have to go see that. It's been a long time
since I've seen it. It's very good. It's like it's obviously a drama. It doesn't have a lot of lighthearted moments.
No.
That one is very serious. But, you know, we watched that, my better half and I, back when it was in the Oscar cycle. And I was like, yep, sure. This one. Yeah. Okay. Oscar? Okay. Yep sure.
I liked him in Richard Jewell. He's really good in
Richard. See, I didn't watch Richard Jewell yet.
You should watch Richard Jewell.
What was the show that they did that was very similar?
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. I'm getting the actor mixed up. The gentleman from Richard Jewell did a Unabomber series for maybe Showtime or something like that that I watched.
Okay.
But.
Yeah.
Do like Sam Rockwell. Yeah. Iron Man 2, very bad.
That was ironically the last
very
Sam
bad.
Rockwell movie I saw was on Iron Man 2, actually.
Very not good.
Meh.
That would be the... Yeah, listen, it's not Thor 2. It's not that bad, but it also was not good. Joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery, 403-248-3344, or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive. Northeast. A couple of texts coming in at 960. Billboards is quite dark funny. Yeah, there were some I forget the actress's name who is the lead in the film.
Frances McDermott?
Yes. Yeah. She does a great job, and it's not necessarily funny in the one-liners. It's funny in how raw she is and her just like IDGAF type of attitude. I don't give a hoot.
I like that
about you. And then we're getting some recommendations. Moon was a great Rockwell film. Haven't seen it.
No.
And Marty Rose, have you seen Seven Psychopaths? No. But this has entered my realm a couple of times recently. 2012 film, satirical dark comedy crime. Oh, look at this cast. My goodness. Farrell, Rockwell, Harrelson, Christopher Walken.
Woo! Damn.
I might have seen this.
I have not.
Are they the other serial killer duos? I'm going to look into this more and see if I have seen it. And if not, might have to put it on the list.
You're dead wrong about Sam and Iron Man 2. His dancing at the start was awesome.
Okay. Well, if that's the bar, I guess. And then this comes in. Thanks for the hockey talk. Seems like an extended off season this year for some reason. It just feels longer than the last one because the last one was very short.
Yeah.
Because the last one was like 3 weeks. It was like the PGA off season.
Yeah, we were doing the draft in September. Like, what is this?
And a late text coming in. This individual wants to get blocked. I prefer Christopher Running. Yeah, I'm going to block you. Sports at 960 The Fan.